You're listening to The Takeaway.
I'm Catherine Lanfer here with Faraj Dea. We're both in for John Hockenberry. Here's the good news on the economy. The Dow had a blowout day yesterday, posting its highest closing since last November, topping the 9,000 mark for the first time since January. Now, if you're not on Wall Street but Main Street, there's another uptick you might be interested in. The minimum wage goes up today from $6.55 to $7.25. And to check in about all of this, we're going to go to economist and business professor at the University of Maryland, Peter Morici, our own personal finance guru here. All right, Professor, what can we take from the Dow's closing yesterday? Can we start to be optimistic?
I think we should start to be optimistic. Overall, we've seen more and more, you know, green shoots, as we call them these days, that the economy is starting to turn around. And I expect job losses to end by the end of the year, and that the economy will start to take off in the fourth quarter. And the market tends to smell that stuff in advance because the analysts are looking at the sales prospects of the companies, not how they did last quarter, but how they're going to do next quarter. And the assessment's positive. Also, remember, the Dow is still down 36% from its 2007 high, so these are hardly high prices.
What is behind the rise?
Well, we've had very good profitability reports for the second quarter, which reflects the fact that during this recession, people have really downsized their businesses and adjusted to an economy where there's more saving. So now they can essentially make profits at lower volumes. The whole GM restructuring was about that, but it was going on all around the country.
Let's go to the other uptick, and that is, of course, the rise in the minimum wage. Talk about what impact you think that's going to have on the economy and on jobs.
Well, it has a very mixed impact. For the people that keep their jobs, that make minimum wage or just above, they get a pay increase and they spend more money. Those folks will spend the money because they don't have a lot to save. But some folks with those jobs are going to lose them. And some folks are not going to get hired. And it's going to be very magnified in poorer parts of the country, you know, northern Maine, rural Mississippi, the Dakotas, places where there's not a robust job market, and their times are never really great. So it's a mixed blessing for the poor. This minimum wage increase is terribly timed, given where we are in the economy. But it was statute.
Oh, Peter, this is Farai. We've chatted before. You know, just give us a little taste of who you think will really benefit the most. You know, is it single moms? Is it, you know, just a little
actually,
taste?
You hit it. Single moms. If you go out into rural areas where the economy is never strong, you see the indigenous population working at McDonald's as a career. You see 35-year-old, 45-year-old women working behind counters, and they maybe get a dollar or two more than minimum wage because they have seniority. And whenever the minimum wage goes up, the boss bumps them up as well. It's kind of tradition, custom, if you will. Those people, this is godsend for them because, you know, they're having such a tough time. And,
right.
And this extra money, they're going to keep it. They're not going to lose their jobs. It's the people at the margin, the teenage worker or the new entrant into that class that doesn't get the job.
Right. Well, Peter, thank you so much. Again, Peter Morici, economist and business professor at the University of Maryland. You know, now I want to bring Jason DeParle into the conversation. He's a reporter for our partner, The New York Times, one of the great chroniclers, Jason is, of the working poor. You know, Peter was just saying, Jason, that raising the minimum wage actually could hurt people because it might cause a rise in unemployment. You know, do you believe that? What do you think?
On the margins, sure. Somewhere out there, somebody who might otherwise have gotten a job won't get one if the minimum wage goes up, but that's always the case.
How do you put the two scales together? You know, we're familiar with the image of the scales of justice. If you had to have the scales of, you know, losses in jobs versus the scales of, you know, the rise in pay for poor people.
By historical standards, the minimum wage is still lower than it's usually been over the last 50 years. So given all the problems we have in the economy, I don't think I'd start with the minimum wage.
Well, tell us the story. You reported on a janitor in San Francisco whose wife was pregnant. Tell us the rest of the story.
Well, with record numbers of people unemployed in the country right now, it's not a record unemployment rate, not as a percentage of the workforce, but in terms of sheer record numbers of people, there are more people unemployed now than there have ever been in the United States. and that's putting a huge strain on the unemployment insurance program, which was hobbled even before the recession began. It wasn't processing checks quickly enough, and it didn't have enough money in reserves. So the story about the man in San Francisco is he lost his job in January, and it took him until June, 6 months, to get the benefits for which he was entitled. In the meantime, his wife was pregnant with their first child. And for people who are living one paycheck at a time, a delay of even a week or two can make the difference between a missed meal or a missed rent payment. He went 6 months, and his pregnant wife wound up skipping meals.
Let's talk about how this is happening across the country. We have this big squeeze on states giving out unemployment benefits. When do we hit the full button, as it were?
I'm sorry, which button?
Well, what I mean is there's not the full button, but the money's going to be gone. I mean, the benefits are going to be tapped out.
Well, they already are in 16 states. The states, over the past decade, the taxes that states assess to finance unemployment benefits have hit their lowest record in the history of the program. And it's a steep drop-off from historical standards. If you were looking at a graph of, well, for the previous 40 years or so, unemployment taxes were about 1.1% of the average company's payroll, and over the last decade they fell from about 40% from that level. So the funds, the reserves that states had going into this were about half what the federal government recommends. So they went in a week in the state. This happened on the theory that, you know, recessions didn't really happen anymore. They were infrequent. They were mild. We didn't need to put away money for a rainy day because it wasn't going to rain. And then the storm came.
Well, you know, just quickly, Jason, when you take a look at states like California, you know, which has one of the highest rates of, you know, this kind of IOU system, you know, where they just don't have any money. Do you think that there will be some kind of massive federal spending over a long period of time to pay unemployment, or that
just through the end of next year, California is expected to borrow $18 billion. I mean, $18 billion. That used to be half of what the program spent a year. I mean, that's a lot of money even in today's standards. And they're going to have to pay that money back to the federal government, and interest is going to start kicking in at the end of next year as well. So what that portends is two things: higher taxes on businesses, just at a time when businesses are trying to come out of the recession, go into recovery. That's going to hurt businesses. It's going to slow job creation. And then the other half of it is going to be cuts in benefits, which could be either cuts in the amount of benefits or cuts in the number of people who can get benefits. And that's going to hurt workers at a time when they can't afford it either. So it's terrible timing.
Well, Jason, thank you so much. Again, Jason DeParle, reporter for The New York Times.
Now, in just about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking about the legacy of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. She's going to be leaving office soon. Now, what about the book she's going to be writing? It's all still ahead on The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.